Many people eat in a fight or flight state, and digestion is a rest and digest activity, right? It's a parasympathetic activity. So it's no wonder they have digestive issues because their nervous system is not in the correct state. So something as simple as doing some box breathing before they have their meal shifts them into...
If you want that, it's available to you. Just get rid of the crap, get outside, put your feet on the ground, get connected to nature, start breathing, and see what you might feel, see what you might experience. And it very well could change your life, because it did change mine.
They say the eyes are a window into the soul. The breath is a window into the nervous system. So when the state of our nervous system changes, the first thing, observation that you can make on somebody is the way their breath changes. One of the fastest ways to regulate the nervous system is...
So when people are on this journey, what's the biggest mistake they make when they're trying to heal naturally?
I think the biggest mistake that people make when they're trying to heal naturally is...
Sachin, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here. We've been friends a long time, so it's an honor and a privilege to have you here. So let's, not everyone knows you, so let's get into, you know, how did you wind up into functional medicine, coaching practitioners, online practice, doing all the things that you do?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this. I appreciate the opportunity. So my story starts as a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
And as a chiropractor, I was working with elite athletes, working with Olympians, gold medalists, silver medalists in Beijing. So that ages me a little bit. But many years ago, many lifetimes ago, it feels like that's who I was working with, high-performing elite athletes, helping them run faster, helping them run injury-free, helping them throw further, throw faster.
Any javelin throwers?
I did. I actually had one of my clients was a heptathlete.
Oh, yeah.
So she would... do a bunch of, you know, it's a very unique sport because you have to be good at a lot of different things, throwing, jumping, you know, sprinting. And so one of the things that I learned in helping those people is that they were not really focused on being healthy. They were focused on performing better. Mm-hmm. And many times those can be two different things. In 2006, I was featured on the news as a result of some of the work that we were doing. And that catapulted my exposure to really unwell people. So we went from seeing what I would call some of the healthiest people in our community, elite athletes, as I mentioned, to seeing some of the sickest people overnight. The story that ran was about elbow pain. And all these people came in, none of them had elbow pain. They had all kinds of varied conditions, Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, you name it. The things that, you know, perhaps now I have solutions for. At the time I didn't. And that's when I started learning about functional medicine and going down the functional medicine rabbit hole. I, you know, learned about how to evaluate my clients more carefully, looking at them outside of just their physical body, looking at what's happening inside, the invisible factors that we can't really see. And as I started handing out a functional medicine intake form to my chiropractic patients, I saw the opportunity to be in greater service to them because many of them had all kinds of other issues that they would have never thought to bring to me. And I wasn't really assessing or evaluating them. So this led me down the functional medicine path. And that really opened up my eyes to what's possible in terms of helping people. And then I started realizing that there's a simple framework that we can use to help people, which is teaching them how to take care of themselves. And that's what was missing in healthcare. So I started coaching practitioners around that. And now I train practitioners all over the world, teaching them how to apply simple, affordable, practical solutions using, you know, innate intelligence philosophies, which is what we learn in chiropractic, to help them be the best version of themselves and create rapid transformation in their health.
Yeah, I've seen it, you know, over and over again, especially with one thing that happens with chiropractors is it's kind of like where the sick people go. And if they think that you're smart, they come running to your door because chiropractors have a different philosophy, right? That the body does heal. There is innate healing within us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come from a pill or a potion or a medication. It comes from within. So it's a powerful message that needs to be shared with the world. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of different questions here, and I want you to rip through them for me. In that light, what is the number one myth that clients and patients believe that's actually keeping them sick?
I think the number one myth when it comes to something that keeps people sick is where they look for answers. Most people look outside of them for answers, thinking that something external to them is going to fix them, when really it's helping them understand that their body is the only thing that can fix them from the inside, from within. Now, the outside environment plays a huge role because it allows our genes to properly express themselves, but ultimately it's our body that does the healing. You won't find the answer in the bottom of a pill bottle. You won't find the answer at the bottom of a prescription bottle. And that doesn't mean that these things don't help and can't support people, but ultimately we are our own best medicine. We are our own surgeon, our own pharmacy, our own nurse, our own doctor. And it's our obligation as practitioners to help people see that and teach them what unlocks that medicine inside of them.
Yeah, I'd like to say it's like you people are looking to a doctor or to a system. I mean, you're from Canada. I'm sick. My healthcare system, the national healthcare system, which is so great in Canada, is going to fix me. I don't have to worry about anything. I get free medications, all this stuff. I can just retire and have an abundant life. But that doesn't give you an abundant life. It's actually quite the opposite, you know, because those there's very few medications that are going to give you an abundant life. They can give you a short term. They can give you some fix, get away some pain, but it's not giving you longevity necessarily. There's side effects to all that stuff. So that's an interesting, I really like that approach. So why do you tell your patients that they're their own surgeon, that they're their own pharmacy? Why do you say that?
Because they are, and I've witnessed it over and over and over again. If you think about it, you know, when we were born, two cells came together, started dividing, and that created us. And we are literally holograms. Cells are dying, cells are being reborn in every single moment of our life. In fact, during this interview, millions of cells will die and be reborn silently. And just like buying you a new car doesn't make you a better driver, giving you new cells doesn't necessarily make you healthier, unless you change the signal to those cells, unless you change the environment that you're in, unless you change the status of your nervous system. Those are the things that signal the cells to perform at their best so that you have what we call homeostasis, which is balance. That's what the body's always striving for. And if our environment, food choices, emotional baggage, these type of things take us out of homeostasis, we never get to experience true health. And I don't believe in the philosophy of waiting until your health breaks down by somebody else's arbitrary standards, right? You know, when people go to the doctor, they could feel so unwell, and the doctor would tell them everything's normal because their health isn't meeting their standards, or their disease isn't meeting the standards that have been set out by medicine. So why wait until you get that sick to then learn how to be healthy? What I'd love to see is a world where people know how to take care of themselves from the moment they're born, or at least their parents do. That would create a completely different life and trajectory for that person. Their ability to contribute, their ability to serve, their ability to experience life would be totally different versus living incorrectly or incongruently for 30, 40, 50 years, because it takes that long to destroy your body. It doesn't happen overnight.
No.
And it's kind of the gift and the curse. Our bodies are so resilient, so we can abuse them for many decades until we have to pay any repercussions. But that's also what makes them so beautiful. Imagine if we took care of them, where that could take us.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I love about you is that everything comes back to, if we take care of our bodies, we can help humanity. You know, if our children are healthy, we have a brighter future. It's not just health so that I can, you know, have a better sex drive or live longer. It's not just, there's a bigger meaning to health and healing. It's if you're healthy, if your child is healthy, the impact, the solutions you can provide humanity, the love that you can give far exceeds your own personal gain. So when people are on this journey, what's the biggest mistake they make when they're trying to heal naturally?
I think the biggest mistake that people make when they're trying to heal naturally is they try to do too much all at once. They try to outsource their health and healing instead of insourcing it. And they lose faith in their body because they've been convinced somehow along the way that their body is broken. In fact, their body is their ally. It's the only thing that's been working for them 24/7 from the moment they've been born. So we try to first change their psychology around their body, change the awareness around their body, and change the recognition that the body is going to do most of the healing, the majority of the healing, as long as we provide it with the right information and environment in order for it to do that. So the first thing is we got to help people understand that they are the most potent medicine that exists that can heal themselves. Nothing can fix their body better than can fix itself. And so what we teach people to do is how to become their own doctor. What I believe is the doctor of the future isn't me, it's the patient. And that is a complete flip in the way we approach healthcare right now, because right now people are going to see somebody else to fix them. But I believe health is really simple. Da Vinci said that the greatest sign of sophistication is simplicity, which to me means if the body's the most sophisticated piece of equipment or machinery that we know of, it should be simple to take care of. In fact, what I teach people to do is embarrassingly simple. The more complicated the process gets, the more it moves away from the laws of nature. You see, the way God created us is to be simple to take care of. In fact, many of our counterparts, like animals, don't have to think about their health, right? They don't have to think about watching the sunrise and sunset. They don't have to think about their circadian rhythm. They don't have to think about grounding. They don't have to think about eating in season. They're already doing those
All
things
those things.
just by living in congruence with their environment. Now, human beings, for the reasons of convenience and other factors, we've become, we've separated ourselves from our environment. One of the greatest mistakes we've made is we don't look at ourselves as animals. And when we don't look at ourselves as animals, it's easy for us to go down a path of incongruence. If we treated our pets the way we treat ourselves, they would live half as long. And
And
so,
when we do, they do live half as long. They have disease, they get cancer, they get tumors, when we do the medical treadmill on them. But if they eat raw, they run around, they're in the sun, they're healthy, they're eating the right types of foods, they're not eating glyphosate sprayed grains, they live much healthier, longer
They
lives. They
do.
don't have bad breath, they don't have bad teeth, all
Yeah,
the
and they
things.
shouldn't, right? Like most of the problems that people have these days didn't exist a few hundred years ago. Right? We didn't live as long. I get that. A lot of that has to do with sanitation. And I'm grateful for the medical miracles and marvels that are available. In fact, emergency medicine saved my wife's life and my son's life. So I'm indebted to, the possibilities that it offers, but it didn't make either one of them healthier. In fact, the thing that made both of them as healthy as they are is declining many of the medical interventions that were suggested to them and not listening to the opinions and the theories that were postulated. So, one big mistake that people make is not believing that their body is capable because they're just so beat down and convinced that it isn't the most potent tool that they have to heal.
That's one of the biggest paradigms, I think, and you're doing a good job of removing this paradigm, is that we need a doctor to heal. And you're saying you don't need a doctor to heal. You are your best doctor. And it's a mindset issue. And I 100% agree with you. The further away you get from nature, the more unhealthy you're going to be. So every decision that you're making, from the clothes that you're wearing, oh, it's polyester with no frequency, with no BPA free sticker on it, but it probably has BPA. It may even have PFAS. It may have, who knows what, hormone disrupting compound, carcinogenic compound that's not on the label, and they don't have to let you know what that is, whoever they is, formaldehyde, flame retardants, and so far away from nature as it's intended. Just clothing, but then we're talking medications, we're talking the hair care products that are 50% petroleum based toxins and hormone disruptive, and the lotion you're put on that's 50%, petroleum
Starts
based
adding
toxins.
up,
Yeah, and it eventually it's like your body's resilient, but the like we talked about the germ theory, the terrain that you need to be healthy, strong, and robust is now breaking down. And the further away we get from God, in his design, the sicker we get. And so the spirituality part is also, I think, important, because we do have a design. There's no one, the greatest mathematician and geniuses of our time and of over the last 1,000 years would all agree of an intelligent design at the very least. So I love that, once again, we align, and that, and even if we didn't, I wouldn't care.
But
But
we're not separate from nature,
we're
right?
not.
And the more we, like you said, the more we separate ourselves, the less health we can express.
Yeah, sunshine, grounding, and it's funny that they tell us to slather in sunscreen and not get into sun
Oh,
and
of course they do.
wear sunglasses, and it's all money driven, right? It's pretty silly,
Well, I think hopefully it's coming around,
Yeah, it is coming
right?
around.
For me, it's really, I just see a huge opportunity for healing to take place for people. I tell my clients, listen, you are an outdoor plant that somehow got planted indoors, and you weren't taught the rules of engagement. So what most people do is they don't realize what buckets they need to fill each day, and therefore they never get to truly express health. And the analogy I can share is imagine taking a plant and putting it in a dark closet and negotiating with the plant and telling it, listen, I know I'm putting you in a dark closet, but I'm going to give you more water. Right? The plant's still going to die and it's still going to wilt.
It's
It's
gonna
and it's not
die
going
more quickly because the roots are gonna
to, right?
rot.
And it's not going to fully express itself,
Right.
right? So most of us, if we're missing, non-negotiable aspects of health, expecting to be healthy. And then we use things, even supplements, to prop us up when in reality we're missing, the environmental inputs that are so necessary. A good example is vitamin D. And not to say that vitamin D can't be helpful, but what we're finding now is that it doesn't actually reduce all-cause mortality. So vitamin D, while it can prop somebody's lab numbers up, that isn't the only benefit of the sun. When, vitamin D is low, it's a proxy for not getting enough sunlight. But there's other genes that are activated when you're outdoors. Somebody who is low in vitamin D is low in fresh air. Their circadian rhythm is probably off. They're probably not grounding. They're probably not inhaling the microbiome of nature and improving their terrain. So there's a lot of things that they're missing aside from the vitamin D being low. And so we can give them vitamin D and they can come back a few months later and their levels are going to be optimized, so to speak, but we didn't change the behavior. So we have to also understand the labs don't tell the whole picture. This is a big mistake, and probably one of the bigger mistakes that people make is they rely on labs to tell the whole story. But your labs don't tell me what time you went to bed last night. Your labs don't tell me how much you love yourself. Your labs don't tell me if you're breathing through your nose or your mouth. Your labs don't tell me what your oral microbiome looks like. Your labs don't tell me what your connection to source or nature is. If you're grounding, what type of fabrics you're wearing, right? None of that stuff shows up in your lab work. And these are the simple things that people can start doing immediately, right? The body doesn't resist, right? The body doesn't resist. It insists that you do these things, right? This is why we feel better almost immediately when we go outside, when we get our feet in the grass, when we step away from our devices, when we go to bed at a reasonable time, when we watch the sunrise and sunset. I mean, these are things that are absolutely necessary inputs for us to express our health. And so there's nothing in a pill bottle that you can get that replaces that. And there's nothing that you can do to test your lab work that actually identifies those problems. So people are kind of chasing their tail, wondering why their labs look normal and they don't feel good. It's because not all the things that we need to express full health are going to show up in our lab work.
Some of the most important things.
Absolutely.
They're free.
Yep.
They're important and they move the needle quickly in your life. And when someone asks me, like, what are the three most important things you do? I'm like, yeah, more fresh air, get out in the sunshine, especially in the morning, and get your feet on the ground. And that's going to freaking change your life.
Oh,
Like, and the science backs it up to the hilt.
yeah.
Peer-reviewed,
Yeah.
literature talks about all this stuff, and it gets marginalized because it's not driving the system,
Yeah.
that we live in, the convenience system. And I love the analogy of a plant inside, because we go inside with UV blocking windows and we're not getting the infrared spectrum that's driving our mitochondria and energy and our vitamin D. And so these little boxes and a plant, if you can get a plant outside, it won't flower unless it's outside. Why? It might live and survive, but if you get it out in the sunshine where it belongs, it can go through its full life cycle. It can reproduce, it can create, right? And when you're inside and you're planted inside, you don't get enough of those external inputs to be truly healthy. So getting outside, if there's any message that you hear, it's get your butts outside. It's and get into nature. It's the greatest healer. If someone's watching this and they're overwhelmed, but if they want to change their health in 5 minutes, what would be the first thing you tell them to do?
First thing I tell someone to do if they want to feel better is go outside. And going outside exposes us to God's design. So we are actually fractal by design. And so fractal means that we're self-similar repeating patterns. So if you look at our lungs, if you look at our blood vessels, if you look at the architecture of our brain, it actually is based on fractal mathematics. Nature is also based on fractal mathematics. You stare at a tree, it's all self-similar. You look at the clouds, they're all self-similar. So being in those environments actually immediately relaxes our nervous system. So the fastest way to get into a flow state, the fastest way to put our nervous systems into a calm state is to be immersed in self-similar repeating patterns. If you live by the water, go stare at the waves. If you live in the desert, go stare at the sand dunes. If there's clouds in the skies, stare at the clouds. If there's trees or bushes around you, go stare at them for a few minutes, and you'll immediately feel this wave of peace wash over you. Mm-hmm. The next thing you can do while you're doing that is slow down your breath. So most people overbreathe. When we overbreathe, we drive our sympathetic response. Many people breathe through their mouth, and so that activates the sympathetic response in their body. So if we want to feel calm, relaxed, focused, present, surround yourself in nature, slow down your breath, 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, and breathe through your nose. And you will feel within minutes, maybe even less, you'll feel peace and tranquility and calm wash over you. And you have access to that anytime you want it.
Yeah. So it's actually in less than 5 minutes, you can change your health. That's beautiful. So here's a question. This is intriguing to me because cyclic sign has been one of transformative for my health, spirituality, calming down my autonomic nervous system. It's the number one way to improve your mood, decrease anxiety, you know, reset your autonomic nervous system. But cyclic sighing is not, you know, slow in, slow out. And you're an expert at this. Like, I love talking to you, and like, your analogies are beautiful. And a lot of the things that that I'm applying to my life, you're putting science to it. So it's actually, this is a great conversation. I'm really enjoying it. I always do, because you go so deep. So cyclic sighing, how does that work? I mean, the Harvard research, actually, it's called pranayama. This is ancient tech, right? Mm-hmm. Ancient connection tech, hypothalamus, pituitary, you know, energy chakras, like all the stuff, you know. And Harvard has hijacked it and called it cyclic sighing. What is your thoughts on that type of breath work? Do you know much about it? If you don't, that's okay. But it's becoming more popular.
Yeah, you know, the thing with breath work that's really interesting is when you, they say the eyes are a window into the soul. The breath is a window into the nervous system. So when the state of our nervous system changes, the first thing, observation that you can make on somebody is the way their breath changes. Mm-hmm. So if somebody were to barge into this room right now, the first thing that we would do is gasp, right? And if we were threatened, or if there was a, you know, challenge that we had to face and that threat went away, we would breathe a sigh of relief without even realizing it. If somebody says something funny, we're going to laugh. That's breathing, right? Try laughing without breathing. If we're upset, we cry, because that regulates our nervous system and it releases, you know, stored emotion that we have. So our body and our nervous system really is constantly using our breath to regulate itself and also re-regulate itself. So when we use the breath, prana is life force, yama is control. So the word pranayama comes from the Sanskrit, which means life control. So you can literally control your life and all of the little intricacies of what's going on inside your body through your breath, because it's not just breathing in and out. You can do breath holds on the inhale, on the exhale. You can breathe through your left nostril, your right nostril. You can put your tongue in the roof of your mouth and breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. So there you have, it's really an art and a science. And so there's many different ways to breathe depending on the response that we're looking to elicit. Now, the cool thing about breath is that it's the bridge between our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So if somebody is experiencing a stressful, challenging time, we can use their breath to get them into a more parasympathetic state. Or if somebody wants to increase exercise performance, then we can have them breathe in a way that also increases exercise performance and gets them more in a sympathetic state. So there's different breaths that we can use for different situations. And so there isn't just one breath. There's an app for everything. There's a breath for everything. So if somebody wants to immediately relax their nervous system, we use something called a physiologic sigh, which is a deep inhale, hold at the top, and then an audible exhale, emptying their lungs as fully as they can. Doing that for 3 to 5 times, they'll feel an immediate wave of relief and relaxation. If somebody wants more energy, we use something called bellows breath, where rapidly moving their arms up and down and exhaling forcefully and inhaling forcefully 30 times, that gets their heart pumping. That gets them into a more sympathetic state.
Getting ready for war.
Exactly, right?
Yeah,
So
it's probably why they chanted before they go out into war.
yeah,
Yeah.
so if you think about it, like your heart is located, you know, just above your diaphragm and in between your lungs. So if you were to breathe in rapidly, you're going to squeeze your heart intensely. And if you exhale rapidly, your diaphragm is going to be moving up and down. So the apparatus of your lungs and respiratory system are also helping regulate and pump blood through your body. What also happens when you breathe correctly, the biggest lymph nodes in your body are underneath your diaphragm. And so if I was an intelligent creator, that's exactly where I'd put them, because you take 23,000 breaths every day. So if you're breathing correctly 23,000 times a day, your lymphatic system is going to get a nice gentle pump. And remember, our trunk organs don't have muscles wrapped around them, right? Like our lymphatic vessels in our arms and legs do. So our diaphragm acts as a piston that pumps that lymph. So proper breathing plays such a huge role in our lymphatic health and our cardiovascular health. But the third thing that it does that often gets overlooked is it plays a huge role in our myofascial system. So our myofascial system is like basically the internal internet of our body. Our myofascial system connects every cell nucleus to each other in this web-like fashion. So it's like this internal plumbing that we have that allows every cell nucleus to communicate with each other in an instantaneous fashion. So it's quite remarkable, and it connects all the way from our head all the way to our toes, and it's the storehouse, the warehouse of our emotional state and emotional experiences that we've had. So our fascia, when we do breath work with our clients, and I'll be doing that some of that this weekend, when we do breath work with people, when we get them breathing in a rhythmic fashion for an extended period of time, it's like we're shaking the tree, and they were any weak branches are going to fall off, any ripe fruit is going to fall off. And so what happens is it boils all that to the surface, and then we release those emotions. So a lot of people have emotions buried deep in their myofascial system, which can be causing dysfunction, can be causing pain, it can be causing emotional hardship for them. And so breath work can be a way to help them release these things. And one thing that that happens to children when they're young, and I'm sure I was guilty of this at some point with my son, is one of the fastest ways to regulate the nervous system is through crying. That's why we always feel better after we cry.
Always, yeah.
But many parents will tell their child to stop crying. And the only way to stop crying is to stop breathing, which means that when you're trying to get a child to stop breathing, all that energy, that emotion that they're trying to release gets buried down. And where does it get buried? It gets buried into the myofascial
Naturally, yeah.
system. And then later on, it shows up as some sort of dysfunction. And this is why doing things like, somatic breath work can help release these emotions that people have. You know, we take 23,000 breaths a day. We consume 30 pounds of air every day, which means we eat more air, consume more air in a day than the amount of food that we would eat in a week. But very few people pay attention to this.
Yeah.
You know, we have a microbiome in our mouth, we have a microbiome in our sinuses, we have a microbiome in our lungs. So the outside air plays a huge role in our overall health. And in fact, our immune system starts in our nose. So you can't even talk about like immune health unless you first talk about the state of the way we breathe, and especially breathing through our nose.
Yeah, this is just incredible stuff, right? It's free, it's ancient wisdom, and I think it's been quite honestly suppressed in America for whatever reason. Well, I guess for every other reason.
Well, I think.
You can't really monetize breath work, but it's for religious reasons, for it not being taught, that it wasn't cool, that it was like all the reasons, right? It's just not normal. It's becoming normal because of, folks like you. But I'm here to say that, this is beautiful and it's life transforming and it can make your life so much better. I've sent out, there's a guy named David Elliott. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he teaches pranayama. And you can do extended, you can do short. I've sent it to several friends. It's saved marriages. It's helped people sleep and regulate their nervous. They think it's like some miracle. And I was against it. But I was in a, not against it, but I was nervous, like, oh, because of just old beliefs, just BS. And I was experiencing anxiety for the first time in probably 15 years, maybe 20, because when I was sick, I'd have this anxiety where I just couldn't enjoy life. And it was happening again. I'm, you know, like, what? You know, it's like, I'm a non-toxic dad. This shouldn't be happening to me. I have a great life. And my buddy, and he kind of mentioned maybe we'll do some breath work. And so I go down to the river and I said, hey, because I was fishing. I couldn't even enjoy fishing. It's one of the things I just love. And I'm like, let's do some breath work. And he's like, all right, let's go. And I did the breath work. I had my arms lit on fire. Mm-hmm. I cried like a baby, like all that fascial release, depression, anxiety gone, never came back. And that's a fact. And I don't know how many times you've probably seen that in people, but that energy release was like, and then I got mad. I'm like, what was stopping me? You know, I saw Sachin talk about this so many times, but I had this mental block. So if you're hearing this and you're having a mental block, like, don't label it, just do it. You did it as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You do it naturally. Just do it intentionally. You know, look up Sachin, look up all David Elliott, whoever. And, but that repetitive breathing is, the pranayama repetitive is what really opened me up to even to all the things that you're talking about. I'm getting so excited. Like, I want to try some of the other things.
I poo-pooed it as well because, you know, it was introduced to me many years ago from a patient, the idea of pranayama, but I often associate it to meditation. And, you know, for anyone who's watching this, it doesn't have to be meditation. You're already breathing.
Mm-hmm.
But most people are not breathing with any awareness. So the way I look at breath work is not just, you know, the 10, 15 minutes that you might do. That's like 1% of your day. What I try to focus on with my clients as well is how are you breathing the other 99% of the mm-hmm. day? When you're checking your emails, how are you breathing? When you're lifting weights, how are you breathing?
Mm-hmm.
When you're getting ready for bed, how are you breathing, right? So breath is an access point to our nervous system. It's a direct access point to our nervous system so that we can choose what state we're in. If I want to do something more parasympathetic, like if I want to digest my meal, I want to go to bed, I want to, you know, read a book. You know, if I'm sitting there reading a book and I'm short, shallow breathing,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be hard to focus and concentrate, as I would expect. But if you're not aware of that, then that's mm-hmm. going to be a problem. So what happens for a lot of people, and the reason that this might be the case for some individuals, is if they suppress their crying or suppress their emotions, they develop trigger points in their diaphragm. And these trigger points in the diaphragm, if you just, you know, feel underneath your rib cage, you might be able to find some of them for some people. And that leads to the diaphragm not moving through its full range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
So now their natural breath becomes short and shallow. So they steer more towards a sympathetic dominant state. Even if it's slightly dominant, it's like your wheel. If your alignment in your car is off a few feet, it's not going to make a big difference. But if you drive like that for 8 hours, right, you're going to be in a totally different town. So for a lot of people, they don't have the awareness of the way they're breathing. And so by course correcting, every breath, you know, the 23,000 that we take, every breath is an opportunity to change the trajectory of your life, your nervous system, the state that you're in, and maximize whatever activity you're trying to do. Most people have a dysfunction, I coined a term called autonomic pairing. So you want to make sure your nervous system is in the state that matches and is paired with the activity you're trying to do. So a simple example would be many people eat in a fight or flight state.
Mm-hmm.
And digestion is a rest and digest activity, right? It's a parasympathetic activity. So it's no wonder they have digestive issues because their nervous system is not in the correct state. So something as simple as doing some box breathing before they have their meal shifts them into the state that's going to optimize their digestive function. And then we get them to chew their food, sit down, slow down, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to eat until you salivate. That tells us that your digestive system is ready and your nervous system is what prepares your digestive system. So just simple things like that, just becoming self-aware is so incredibly powerful for people. And, you know, people might be wondering, and I wondered this too, like, how am I going to think of my breath all day, right? I've got other things to worry about. But there's something that we think about more than anything else every day. It's different for every person. For you, it might be you know, I don't want to make any assumptions, but for you, it might be your kids, right?
You got it. I was going to say, it's connection with my kids. It's like, I want more connection with my kids.
Yeah.
So I change my breath. One of the reasons I do breath work is so I have a better connection with my children and my team and the people around me. Like, that is core to me, because I'm so sick of running with my tire off and just go, go, go. And in that parasympathetic state, and because I just want to achieve, and, you know, the wounds of the father, and, you know, all those things, you know, trying to get my dad's, you know, approval, and like all these, this bad hardware or software that's in my life, that's taking my life off course. But if you can literally reprogram, you know, your life, like you said, just with breathing, because you can change your state. And it's fascinating, like box breathe. I write about this stuff in my book, but I mean, I'm not by no means an expert. I'm just starting to apply this stuff to my life, and I'm so excited.
Yeah.
You know, and so you said, so my kids, so let's go back to that.
Yeah, and I'll just touch on something you said. The master is the forever student, right? So an expert and a master is somebody who's just constantly learning. So you are the expert, right? And you're the expert of your own body and your own lived experience. So, you know, some people might be like, well, how am I going to think of my breath all day? So there's a framework for behavior change by BJ Fogg. He wrote about it in his book called Tiny Habits. And BJ Fogg, his students invented Instagram, for example. So they know a lot about emotional behavior change and psychology. And so there's a formula. It's called behavior equals MAP. The first thing is motivation. M is motivation. So you have to be motivated to change, right? You have to be motivated to want to be better, which I hope everyone who's watching this wants to be. The second thing is you have to have the ability, right? So all of us have the ability to change our breath, right? We have conscious control over it. It's our diaphragm is the only muscle that works for us 24/7 that we have conscious control over. Our heart's pumping 24/7, but you can't control your heart rate. You can indirectly through your breath. And the third thing is a prompt. So that's where I invite people to, and I ask them, what's the thing you think about the most? All right. So if you think about your kids the most every day, well, every time you think of your kids, just think of your breath next. Right. And then just ask yourself, is my breath matching the state that I want to be in? So if your breath is short and shallow and you want to be in a more relaxed state, well, we can, with our next breath, we can lengthen our breath. We can slow down our breath. We can put our tongue at the roof of our mouth, breathe through our nose. So we have 23,000 opportunities in every single day to function better using something that we think about all day to anchor us.
Yeah. You triggered something. I don't know if this makes any sense, but if you could have your last breath, what would it be, right? Like, what state would you want to be in with your last breath? Would you want to be in an anxious state, or do you want to transform your life by choosing your breath? Because we can choose our breath. Like, it doesn't, we can't allow outside influences to choose it all the time. Like, if you're scared, you have to, but you can literally choose your last breath, or you can choose your next breath. What is your next breath going to be before you have your last breath? I'm trying to like play on that analogy, but because you're going to live your whole life and you're going to have your last breath. But once you're, you know, pixelated and into the, and your energy has, you know, and soul has now left this planet, you're not going to be like, oh, I wish I was, you know, in a heightened sympathetic state yelling at my children, which many dads do, because our nervous system wasn't controlled properly, and you can control it with breathing. I'm here to say that my kids want me to go do breath work now. They think it's silly, but dad's nicer when he does breath work. Are you going to do breath work today when, you know, so this is the stuff that I get for my children, you know, and they call it TM, the mood. Dad's got TM, the mood, because no, why? I'm pushing so hard at work. I have so many responsibilities. I'm in this and I work from home. And so they get to notice when I'm in the fight or flight drive, because I can't live, you know, in this happy go lucky state when I'm trying to run my business. Now it's good because I like to have some of it. I want to be kind and not, you know, pushing and listening and, you know, especially with our teams, like, but there's a time that, hey, let's get moving. Let's win the game. You know, we're at the finish line here, you know, and we're going to run, you know, the fullback, you know, behind the guard, and we're going to win, you know, so, but we got to push sometimes, you know, so it's interesting, you know,
and there's a breath for that too. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love what you're saying and sharing, and just having the self-awareness, I think, is really important. And then having a tool, right. Just knowing, okay, something is off, but then having a tool to course correct.
I never had a tool. That's why I'm so excited about it. You know, I never had the tool. You know, I've listened to your talks before, but it, just like you said, I it was my children, you know, that, and it was that anxiety that triggered it. But I think it was all God. Like, I think it's still like, I still think there's a, you know, a creator, and that he cares that much that he puts challenges in your life that make you course correct. Because if, you know, when something's off, like, I don't think the word universe is working against you. I think it's working for you. I think there's a divine flow to things, and you have to flow in that energy. And when you're down here, it hurts, it's painful, and it's just so much easier. And breath is one of those ways I think you can get into the right frequency, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a, you know, for clinicians who are watching, this is a great way to start your client appointments, to breathe together in sync with one another. It's a great way to start your team meetings, to breathe together and get into, you know, that parasympathetic state where creativity is unlocked, for example, and problem solving is unlocked, because we all have a lot on our plate,
I'm guessing
right?
flow state.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we, you know, we all have a lot on our plate. We all have a lot of things going on. There's a lot of moving parts in our lives, entrepreneurs, traveling, you know, even doing things like this. You know, there's so much on our plate, and I feel like having something that can anchor us and bring us back to our, you know, our stillness is super important, right? And in the past, I might have done that with supplements. You know, breath is the literally the fastest adaptogen,
Oh, it's
right? There's nothing that works faster than your breath to change your physical, emotional, and chemical state. And you see that in people, right? Just like, again, if somebody were to break into this room, immediately our breath would change. As soon as this interview's over, we're going to breathe a sigh of relief,
yeah, we will.
right? So our body's always communicating. And what I encourage dads you know, moms and anyone who's watching this, even if you're not a parent, is pay attention to how somebody is breathing in your presence. So it's great for relationship management as well. So if I'm having want to have a conversation with my wife and I bring up the topic, I pay attention not to the words that she says, but I pay attention to the way her breath changes. And from the way her breath changes, I can tell if she wants to have this conversation or not, if it's a good time to have this conversation or not. And so it's really fascinating to have that observation, because I think it enhances relationships as well.
Now you can read people by how they breathe. You
Right,
know,
exactly.
you can know if they're lying, you can know if they're frustrated, you know if you're gonna, you know, get punched in the face. You know, it's like, but does it help with sex, Sachin? Breathing. Does breath help with have better sex? You
You
know?
had to go there, right?
Yeah.
It certainly can, right? So, you know, there's Tantra, right, which teaches us how to control our breath and our body. And there's you know, we want to, you know, many people will have premature ejaculation or, you know, sexual dysfunction if they're in a sympathetic dominant state. So by using breath control, slowing down our breath, we can actually enhance our sexual performance. And then, you know, another thing that's important to note is that Viagra, for example, is a nitric oxide recycling, you know, medication. Originally, it was developed to help people with blood pressure. And one of the things they discovered is that one of the nice side effects was that it increased microcirculation because it dilated blood vessels. And that actually happens when we breathe correctly as well. So one thing that a mistake that people make unknowingly is they tend to be habitual mouth breathers. About 50% of people are habitual mouth breathers during the day, 66% of people at night. And so if people are breathing through their mouth, they're destroying the beneficial bacteria on their tongue that actually helps them make nitric
Nitric oxide,
oxide.
yeah.
And so that can also impact sexual function, cause erectile disorders and things like that too.
So there's a, I mean, if that didn't get anybody's attention, you know, then it will. So you can, you know, it's the what they, you say the purple pill or the, what pill is that? I don't
The
know.
blue pill, I
The blue
think.
pill. Yes. I don't even know. Like, I don't even know. Like, it's never even crossed my path. I mean, there's people out there partying and taking blue pills, and all they need to do is do some breath work and they could have all the same amount of fun.
Yeah, you can take nitric oxide support products that can be helpful. There's a company called N101 by Nathan Bryan, and they actually make cardio toothpaste. So a special type of toothpaste is formulated to increase nitric oxide production
By
as
affecting
well.
the microbiome.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And that's why using mouthwash, it trashes your microbiome.
Yep.
It trashes your body's ability to make nitric oxide, which also affects your heart and your sexual performance. So this
And
is,
cognitive.
and
Yeah.
cognitive, yeah, because of oxygen. So that was a deep dive. You know, we went, we on breath work. I didn't think we were going to go that far, but that's beautiful. So here's an interesting question. So when you're doing breath work and there's these chakras and energies and you're feeling energy, what is that? Because I mean, I've seen people like you could feel the energy coming out of them when they're in this, when they're doing breath work. And I just, do you have any of the science behind that? Like, this is just curious for me. I don't even know if it's going to be in the podcast. I just,
you know, it'd be interesting to do like Kirlian photography on people.
Yeah. And see if there's
doing breath work. I'm actually, one of my friends, him and I are partnering on a few breath work projects together. And one of the things we want to do is we actually want to do brain scans of somebody pre and post breath work to see what's happening in their brain. Breath work does shut off the default mode network, which is a part of our brain that ruminates.
Yes.
And repeats over and over again. This is why most people, like Joe Dispenza says, live the same life over and over again. So breath work does give us an opportunity to write a new story for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're moving a lot of energy, right? You're changing the chemistry of your body because of the amount of CO2 and oxygen. The ratios are changing significantly when you're doing this breath work. And you're really, like I said earlier, you're really shaking that myofascial web. So there's a lot of energy that's moving through us when we're doing breath work. And I don't know exactly what all of that is, right?
And
I think like that's part of the mystery and the mysticism of this work. And I'm sure that over the next few years, we'll have the instruments and the tools to measure it to, you know, not to validate it because it's already happening, but to understand it a little bit better.
Yeah, this isn't new, you know? Yeah. We're just waking up to it here in America.
Yeah, exactly.
And
people's experiences are different too. So some people feel really hot, some people feel really cold, some people feel light, some people feel heavy, some people feel emotional,
mm-hmm.
Some people don't experience anything, right?
Yeah, and that's
not right or wrong either.
People are like, I'm relaxed, you know? Me, I'm like, you know, it depends on where I'm at and what I'm pushing for. But I want to go back to one thing. What I believe breath work also does is if it connects you to nature,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, and there's science on this stuff too, but you're hearing the frequency of a bird. You're now tuned in to the rustling of leaves and these frequencies of the earth, the sounds of the planet, the squirrel running, you know, through the grass. And it becomes beautiful because I've noticed that in breath work. All of a sudden I'll hear the bird or the hummingbirds come around me a lot when I'm doing breath work outside and the flap of their wings. And it's like, it's invigorating. And it just like, sometimes it just makes me cry because there's these frequencies that I didn't even know because I'm in this sympathetic state mm-hmm. and you don't hear any of that. You fly right by it and it gives you an opportunity to hear nature. And I just found that fascinating.
Yeah, no, it's
this
amazing.
Is just experiential for me.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you're in certain states, you're ready to receive,
mm-hmm.
right? When we're in fight or flight, we're not there to receive, whether it's advice or guidance or beautiful sounds or beautiful visuals, because we're focused on, you know, getting the task done. But when we're in that more parasympathetic state, we're more aware of our surroundings. We can be in a state of receivership, which I think is really valuable. And I'm grateful that you get to experience that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, this is newish for me, you know, and mm-hmm. so it's really cool to have this conversation, you know, because I know I've talked to you about breath work in the past, but I'm like, so, you know, I'm becoming a student of it, you know, like
amazing.
You said. Yeah, so it's fun.
You know, the two most powerful experiences I've had in my life had to do with breath work. The first one was my son's first breath. And just being there for that was just amazing. And just to see how celebrated that first breath is for people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other experience that was really powerful was witnessing my grandmother's final breath. And for her to be surrounded by her whole family and for all of us to be there and to witness that
mm-hmm.
Was quite magical. And it just kind of brings up something for me, whereas we celebrate these two milestones, right? These bookends of life, so to speak, but there's very little awareness of how to breathe in between. Now, in India, for example, pranayama is part of the curriculum. So the students in school do yoga, pranayama, it's all part of the curriculum there. Whereas here it's extracurricular, it's external to mm-hmm. our core routines. Practice of yoga and pranayama changes, you know, their brain in a really powerful way, changes their self-awareness in a really powerful way. And I think we need more of that,
We need more of
right?
it now than ever. And that's why I lean into it, because I just want my heart better. I want it more open. I want it more connected. I'm 50 years old. Like, that's why I think I'm so excited about breath work, because I'm more connected. I'm more loving. I'm more kind. I'm a better parent. And I have so far to go. So that's why I want to learn more about it, you know, because the more you know, the more, you know, you need more help, you know. And this has been one of the most powerful tools to make me a better human. And I want us all to be better humans, you know, at the end of the day, because being a bad human is not necessarily your fault, right? Because you weren't given the tools to release some of the traumas and things in your past. So I don't really have judgment towards that. But if stuff like this, people listen to this podcast and just do pranayama, you know, it's like, oh, it's I've had so many Christian, you know, people do it that, you know, were afraid of it. And they're like, that was the most powerful thing I ever did. Thank you so much. It changed my life. It healed my marriage. Like, we were going to get divorced. And, you know, like these stories. And I've only shared it with, you know, a handful of people. And to have a tool like this and to take it away from America specifically, because it's Eastern stuff. We don't touch Eastern stuff. We're Americans. We're from America. You know, we have medicine, you know. Where is that getting us? You know, where is medicine getting us? We're like, what, the sixth, what's it, sickest country in the world, or even worse, third? I don't know. It's up there. We're in the top five. I think we're in the top five sickest countries in the world. You know, we're the most powerful, richest nation in the world, at least for now. And
Well, what does that mean,
yeah, what does that
rich?
mean? Yeah,
Right.
that's what I mean.
If health is wealth, right? Are we really the richest? Right.
No.
I think from a and this is
Because we're unsympathetic.
yeah, I mean, and this might be a little more esoteric, but everything you see around you is just an illusion, right? In Sanskrit, the word is Maya. Nothing is real. In fact, you know, if you think about it, if I came here and I drove by all these beautiful plants and trees and everything, and I'm going to go back and they're going to be a little bit different, right? So everything is constantly changing. The only thing that's real is a thing that never changes, which is the essence of who you are, your soul. And so that's what we should be chasing, right? Is to really discover who we are. That's where all the riches are, right? Not in material things, right? That can be immediately devalued by some sort of external force, right? So the real richness is not just in health, but in the self-awareness that we can acquire through breath work, through good nutrition, through family, you know, and community, and all the things that, you know, that are available to us that seem to be missing these days.
So to like almost to wrap this up, because I know you have to go, but I think the lies, and there's music about this, and I listen to a song that says this, but we have like, we want bigger houses, we want faster cars, we want, you know, more money, a better job, like all these things, but there truly are lies taking us away from the very essence of what we should be, and our souls and love, and that is really what it's almost like. How do I say this? But it's almost like a fake dopamine spike, you know, that you hit the riches, the house, faster things, bigger diamond rings and earrings and looking a certain way, and where they run in this frequency. But it's really a lie. The real essence of who we are comes from within. And when you find that, the joy, the dopamine spike, if you will, is so much better and cleaner and easier. And you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to earn it. It's right there in front of you. And it's like you're saying, it's esoteric, because unless you've experienced it, you don't understand. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, I can't pay my bills. Like, it's not money. You know, so but you can see a lot of societies that don't have any money that had far more joy than I have, you know, and living like a plant in a box with no sunshine.
You know, the happiest I've ever been is when I go camping and I go completely off grid for, you know, 5 to 7 days, and I don't have running water, I don't have any electricity, I don't have cell phone service, and I don't need, you know, a big house, nice car. I mean, I love, you know, don't get me wrong, it's nice to have those things, but not at the expense of the things that really matter. And if people want to know who they really are, is And again, this you have to unpack this, but who you really are is all the things you can't take with you when you leave this planet. Mm-hmm. That's who you really are. So you have to let that sink in.
Yeah.
Right.
I know what you're saying, but it's hard to understand that.
It is.
It's hard.
Right. Yeah. Because, and if we can discover that while we're alive, because you'll discover that eventually,
mm-hmm.
right? That all this stuff that I have isn't who I am. Right. But if you can discover that while you're alive, then you have a second life that you can live, or a third life, or a fourth life that you can live. And you can literally be reborn in this moment, realizing that.
Yeah. And I have to say that, Sachin, this is such a great conversation, because when I turned 50, I really pursued that. I didn't have a midlife crisis. I had, man, I am going to burn the bridge of that belief system and then follow one that's centered on God and connection and finding out who I really am, and quite possibly how I could be used. And that's how Non-Toxic Dad is born. That's why I'm doing this podcast. So a lot of the things that you're seeing me do, because, you know, you've watched me, like I was kind of behind the scenes guy, and now I'm, why am I doing all this? For one reason. So more of these conversations can happen, so that people can find out who they really are, and to realize none of that really is that all that fulfilling. Yes, it's nice, but if it was all taken away from you right now, like, how would you feel? Would you feel connected and safe and good about who you are? And I can absolutely say that I would. So I have a nice car. Take it.
Yeah.
Freaking take it. Because it doesn't give me any more joy. It's another thing I have to take care of. Mm-hmm. It's going to get scratched. It's going to cost money to get fixed. It steals from me. But if I'm strong enough to have the resilience to add that stress to my life, then that's when I can afford it. It's not about the money. Mm-hmm. It's about the stress that it puts on you when you have more crap, right? Because
yep.
You got to cost more people. You got to hire more people, whatever it may be, have a bigger business. The bigger doesn't make better.
Yep.
It adds complication, and you have to become more resilient. You have to become much more effective, efficient. It forces you to change rapidly, and that's all good. But the ease of it all is, if it all went away, would you be happy in your own skin? Would you still have joy? Would you still have peace? You know? So as long as I had food in my family, and this is why I say, like, to all the people listening that have lost someone close to them, and their son or their daughter, or their husband or their wife or whatever, and they still have found joy, they understand it, because they lost the very thing that they live for, but they're still able to find that joy within themselves, to find out who they really are through a tragic loss.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can use breath work to get there, to change your state, to get connected to God, to get connected to nature, to get connected with yourself so that you can be your own doctor, to be open to conversations like this, to not judge and be in that sympathetic state of wanting to be right, but to be like, you know, I'm good. Like, you can believe what you believe, because I'm good with my soul, you know, all is well with my soul. So no matter what you believe and I believe, I'm still happy. I'm still at peace. I'm still at rest. Mm. I'm still connected. I know that God loves me, you know, and that's really all I need to know. Right. But it's so esoteric, because unless you experience it, but if you want that, right. It's available to you, mm-hmm. right. It just get rid of the crap, get outside, put your feet on the ground,
yep.
get connected to nature, start breathing, and see what you might feel, see what you might experience. And it very well could change your life, because it did change mine.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. You know, it's great to have nice things as long as they don't own you.
Right.
Right.
And it's the love of money, you know?
And, you know, as long as you don't identify as those things, right? You can't take them with you. You weren't born with them. You can't take them with you, so that they're not you. They're not even extensions of you. They're just things that you've accumulated along the way, living this mm-hmm. amazing life. And, you know, there's nothing simpler and easier and more accessible than our breath. And I know we've talked about it quite a bit, because it's such a important thing that is so easy to overlook. And the things that are easy to do are also easy not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, don't be like me. Take it for granted until you're, you know, I'm 48, 47 now. So don't take it for granted. Like I did for the first 42 years of my life, not knowing how to access this
So you're still
medicine.
excited about it too. It's only been like 5 years.
Oh yeah, of course. I'm embarrassed that I didn't know about it
Me
earlier,
too. I'm
but
frustrated
I'm
about it as
grateful
well.
that I know it now, and I love teaching it and taking people through experiences and helping people. I mean, that's like such a powerful medicine. There a really simple analogy I tell people is like the value of something to your health is determined by how long you can't live without it. So you can not drink water for a week. You cannot eat for a month, maybe even longer, depending on somebody's body composition, but you can't not breathe for more than a few minutes. So that should just tell you immediately how valuable it is to your health. And so if we just use that as a hierarchy, right? How long do I live if this is not in my life anymore? That should tell us how important it is.
Just to optimize it, put some thought into it, be open to changing it, because I think all of us listening to this know, like, you're likely, most of you, I'd say 60%, are really shallow, short breathers, going through life, snapping at people around you. You're not happy, and here's a tool, you're hearing it right now, that can literally, absolutely, 100% change it, scientifically proven. Without a doubt, even like I said, Harvard is doing studies on this stuff, and it's ancient tech. This isn't Harvard figuring it out. It isn't Western medicine. Like, this is old school stuff, and we're wrapping it in, American language, but it works. It's called cyclic sighing. That was the pranayama one, but and we call it box breathing. And there's like, but all of this stuff has been taught and used for thousands of years, if not longer. And in America, we just don't do it,
Oh, we're getting there.
but yeah,
We're
look
getting
at
there.
you. So you've been doing breath work. You're all positive, but there is a movement happening, and people's lives are being changed. People like you are getting converted over to the simplicity of that. And it's not a viral topic. It's not something that there's not people teaching breath work programs that are killing it online. I mean, I guess there is some, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not this cool viral topic. But I think it is timely. I think this message was supposed to be shared today. I'm glad we deep dived on that. I had a lot of other questions for you, but because you know a lot about a lot of different things, it's really cool. I don't think I've ever had, this conversation, with anyone, and haven't learned so
I'm
much.
grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah, and been more excited about learning more, and so I look forward to this weekend. I know you're teaching on it. I will participate in whatever you're doing. Are you gonna,
Okay.
can we do like a morning breathwork session? Are you gonna do anything like that?
We are. Yeah, on Sunday.
All right, I will be there.
Okay, with bells on.
So it's been an honor and privilege to have you on the show.
Thank you, my friend.
Let's live more amazing lives. So if there's one toxin that you would remove from this world, what would it be to end this beautiful conversation?
Yeah, so I like playing with words. So the word toxic, I break it down into talk and sick. So I would get rid of people who talk sick. So talk, right? So one of the things I would encourage people to do is go through their Facebook feed or their social media feed. And anytime they see something that triggers them, just press the X. You don't have to unfriend people. You can unfollow them. You can snooze their posts and you don't have to see them. And then don't talk sick to yourself, right? Your cells are listening to the conversations you're having. And we have about, depending on the research you read, anywhere from 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day. And so those are conversations we're having with ourselves. We take 23,000 breaths, our heart beats 100,000 times a day. So we're there's an opportunity in every breath and every heartbeat and every thought for us to get rid of negativity and remove that from our lives. So don't talk sick to yourself.
I love it. And this is all science-based. We do affect our cellular biology with our words. It can literally transform your life, like breathing. And even throughout this conversation, I noticed 4 times you helped steer me away from slightly negative language patterns. And don't think I don't notice. I don't pick up on your tricks. But I love being surrounded by people who want to uplevel, who I am as a person, and to help remind me of these things that I know to be true. And you know, but if you can create these habits, like you said, and help other people slowly change their life through the breath, through how they're speaking to themselves, understanding how that they are their own doctor and their body can heal, and there's this innate healing, divine fractal, you know, being that we are, and we're connected to nature. This has been a beautiful conversation, and I think a lot of hope and healing is going to come from it. So thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, have you on again.